Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, everyone. Welcome to PWT Talks NXT. We're going to talk about the show for March 24th, 2021, as we get closer and closer to our two-night takeover, stand and deliver. Are they going to call one night stand and the other deliver? I thought maybe they'd try to get cute and do that. They have not yet, but if the first episode doesn't deliver, they can do that and say that was the plan all along. But I didn't know it was going to go on that stupid tangent, but here we are. Every episode right now, unfortunately, has to be a hard sell for either a takeover or a big show coming up. But I did think this one was quite a bit better and more effective than many of the past weeks. I'm glad that I had something that took me out of the show last week because I didn't have anything happier to say than Tom would have about last week's show, but I liked this one pretty well. So we will talk about that. We will talk about the main event, which was not a match but an interview segment, a segment between Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly signing their match, which will now be co-main event for night one of Takeover Stand and Deliver, a segment that I had a lot going for it and then had the noticeable problem of Kyle O'Reilly's hair. I am Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or Spooky Milk Games. Tom Staub, who are you and what did you think of the main event angle?
I knew you were going to mention Kyle O'Reilly's hair. He is not doing himself any favors with that, trying to get over as a babyface. I talked about this a bit last week, but I really do feel like if he was going to drastically change his look like this, it should have happened a couple of months ago when he was number one contender Kyle O'Reilly, not now when I know it's just a visual difference, but this is the language of character in wrestling. And this is one of the signals that you give when you change your character a little bit is a different hairstyle, a different way of trimming your beard, a new jean jacket or whatever it is. And you want more continuity right now between post-Undisputed Era Kyle and number one contender Kyle, who was doing really well. So that's another reason why even the hairstyle itself is awful, but that's another reason why even if it was good, he probably shouldn't be doing it right now. I did think that the brief probably ties into this. Well, it obviously does, but I don't think it warrants being talked about as its own segment. I thought that the attack at Kyle's dojo was better than last week's arrest angle, a little bit more grounded, and I also believe that this is the actual dojo that Kyle trains jujitsu at, so, you know, I like that a lot better than the fake arrest thing. I will say that, you know, hyping a week in advance that Regal was going to have a quote-unquote solution for this problem and then revealing it as just the match is going to be unsanctioned is a bit of a letdown. And that's coming after what has been a letdown of a build to the match. So I'll choose to be optimistic and say maybe they're keeping something in the tank for next time, that there will be new, more interesting layers added to this, and that we'll go into a better stipulation or at least consequence for the outcome of the match in round two. And as far as that, I guess it's not the final sell, is it? But the promos at the end tonight, which basically felt like go-home promos, they were a little childish and even whiny. I did like Kyle cutting himself off to demand that Adam look him in the eyes. I thought that was a nice touch. But other than that, it was just sort of like childish playground stuff. I guess, unfortunately, that covers it. Wish I had more to say about, you know, the long-anticipated Adam Cole versus Kyle O'Reilly, but that's where we're at with it.
Well, there really wasn't any revelation in this, and there doesn't have to be, but it was just them reminding everybody why the feud is happening. There was no real new language or verbiage, not much of that. It was kind of interesting. It was interesting enough, but it really was just a recap of, hey, just in case you missed these 8 weeks of TV, this is what happened, and this is how we're going to pay it off. And yes, sanctioned, unsanctioned matches as a match stipulation are the, like, that's the match stipulation that nobody wants to hear. It's how, if you're a guy out there and you've got a faux hawk, I got to tell you, literally everyone who doesn't have a faux hawk hates faux hawks. There are none of us out there that are like, I wish I could do that, or that looks cool what you're doing. It's horrible.
Hey, don't speak for the bald guys out here.
Oh, okay. So you'd kill to have a faux hawk.
I'm just saying.
Okay. Got it. Well, bald guy, why don't you take over, tell me who you are, and tell me what you thought.
Sorry, I just felt like that was a great place to interject. I am Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter, Nate Lindberg, and I do the hits and misses for NXT. And I kind of got to really echo pretty much everything you guys have said at this point about this particular angle. I don't have a whole heck of a lot to add. It does feel like a bit of a I don't want to say it's a letdown of an angle, because I'm not like let down by it, but it doesn't feel nearly as important as I thought it would once we got here. Whiny schoolyard, that was a very good way of putting those two kind of promos tonight. I kind of got very, very similar vibes. Those weren't the words that came to mind, but I think those describe better than what I was thinking. I really don't have a whole heck of a lot much to add really to it. So I'm not going to, in the interest of time, and we'll move on.
You know, neither one was as bad as the way that Ember Moon and Shotzi Blackheart have been coming up.
Oh, God.
Don't be jelly. Don't say that ever. But, you know, we'll get there to them. Do you want to call us? You can do that thing. It's been a while since I said the phone number, 515-605-9345, or you can email us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. We will get to those emails a little later. We got three of them, and right now we're going to go to the phone lines and talk to our friend Darrell and see what he thought. Darrell, you are on. Let's hear it.
How you guys doing tonight?
Doing pretty well tonight. I'm glad to be back after a one-week hiatus.
Yeah. Glad to hear you. Happy that you're back. Tonight's show, well, I think other than looking at everything, I think they was able to build night one and night two cards to look epic and be great with some of the stories that they told. My first question for you guys tonight will be talking about how they build up the title contention for Johnny Gargano. And I like how they played off and made Johnny name everything that he should be happy about, because it gives him an advantage. But he wanna just hang on. He only get 24 hours to know who his opponent is, which was incredible for me. It made him even more it made me like his character even more in the things that he's doing. But how did you guys like the build up with the battle royal, the six people over a 2-week span? To build up his contender, and who are the challengers that you think will come out and be in that six-man gauntlet? And that's my first question.
All right. I am a sucker for messy situations like this to find contenders. You can't do it all the time because you got to have an issue between the wrestlers, ideally, but doing this every now and then, especially when there's a heel champion to complain about it, I think that works. I think this feels fairly big. I look at this group of 12, and literally anyone could win it. I'll tell you right now, a free piece of spoiler, that Kushida and Pete Dunne will both be eliminated early as a result of each other, because that's going to set up their match for night two. That's happening next week, just telling you now. But yes, this is an impressive assemblage. So 12 guys are in this match: Kushida, Leon Ruff, Austin Theory, LA Knight, Tyler Rust, Jake Atlas, Bronson Reed, Dexter Lumis, Cameron Grimes, Roderick Strong, Swerve, and Pete Dunne. And literally a couple have been champion, or maybe it's just Strong. No, Strong and Leon Ruff. But it just feels like just about anybody could come out of that. I'm a sucker for gauntlet matches as well, and I think if you're going to do something like that, this WrestleMania weekend is a good time to get a lot of people involved because there really, really is a strong mid-card there. It's hard for me to come up with the other names that are not going to move on through to the next round. I got to think that they could do Grimes strong again and can keep their issue going that kind of started tonight, and maybe that'll be a reason they're not in it. They could do something bigger with LA Knight, but that's we'll get to him later also. I don't know. I think just about anybody could come out of this, but I do think that Gargano will come out of this with the championship because I don't see this being the way that we come out of this with with a new champion. But if I had to pick someone right now who is going to win the thing outright, the number one contendership, I would say Bronson Reed. Tom?
Tyler Rust, remember him? So I'm looking at the same thing you're looking at in the sense that we have feuding people in here, which of course you do in any situation like this. But yes, I'm looking at Pete Dunne and Kushida. You've got Swerve and Ruff. Loomis in theory to an extent, although that's murky enough that I'm hesitant to say that it would come to any sort of head. They did that stupid little backstage thing with Grimes and Strong that I really didn't make much of, but you know, who knows, maybe they'll do something with it next week. And then, you know, question mark whether Reed and Knight are still going to have an issue. Reed has no reason to have an issue anymore. But Knight may continue to meddle there. And then Atlas and Rust are just the fodder. Really hard to say that they're not just going to go with the obvious of Dexter Lumis here, since that's where the story has been this whole time. As bad as it's been, that's where it's been. But it does feel like there are other believable options. Reed definitely feels like one of the most believable. But it's hard not just to say Lumis. I feel like there was one other thing. Oh, right. Yes, I agree. Gargano probably is not going to lose. And the reason I say that is because they've been very consistent about planting those seeds with Candice not being, you know, feeling second to his title. And Regal even pointed that out when Johnny walked into his office, like, man, you really wear that title wherever you go. So I feel like Candice has to be involved in the end of Johnny's reign, unless I'm not seeing deeply enough here and he will lose the title and then the story kicks off, because still having Candice isn't enough for him or something like that.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and admit that I did not pick Lumis because I don't want it to be Lumis.
Yeah.
Nate?
So I don't necessarily want it to be Lumis either, but even before you guys are starting to talk about Lumis, one thing that I started to think, like, who have they been pushing recently that's in this match? You got LA Knight comes to mind. You know, he's obviously brand new. And I almost feel like he kind of does need a bit of a stop at the North American title before he goes up top. I think he could even go straight to the main event, but I feel like a stop here would be a good spot just to kind of solidify him as a contender. But yeah, he's obviously somebody who was on my mind, somebody that could, you know, come out here. But Lumis and Grimes. Now, before Grimes got hurt, was off TV for a while, I don't think we got a satisfying conclusion to him and Lumis, and him constantly being terrified of Lumis. Correct me if I'm wrong, because if there was, then that throws off my theory. But I don't think we ever got a satisfying conclusion to that. So I'm wondering if we're going to wind up with some iteration of Grimes Lumis somewhere here,
I think the horror match was kind of supposed to be
but
the
they,
payoff, the health
they
of
continue, they continued it
they
for
continue?
A few weeks after that,
oh,
if I'm not
boy.
Mistaken. I could be wrong, because I thought the same thing, but I was like the wheels started turning in my head, and I'm thinking they were continuing that for a little bit after, because I kind of remember complaining about it, thinking that it should have been over there. But again, I could be wrong. So, but I'm wondering if maybe they come back to that whole angle there, you know, with the two of them. That's, you know, something small. But there was something that's definitely going through my head. But yeah, I Loomis, LA, you know, the other, I think, obvious here would be, like I said, LA Knight, because they have been pushing him so strong. Swerve, I'd like to see it, but I don't think that would work. Yeah, I'm just kind of looking at the poster right now for it, and kind of trying to talk myself through some of these other ones, but those are the ones that immediately jump out at me.
Yeah, no heels coming out of this. It doesn't make any sense to have a heel against Gargano. You can do a heel on TV, but it doesn't make sense with an act like Gargano, unless you really want to turn that other person, which I guess they could do Theory, but I don't think they're taking Theory out of the way this early. I do think he turns on them eventually and becomes a babyface, probably, maybe, but I don't know if this is the time. I think it's probably too early. Darrell, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Now, my six feel like it's going to be this. L.A. Knight, because he's going to eliminate Bronson Reed. That's to continue their feud. Or in my out, I got something other than that. But you also got Dexter Lumis and Austin Theory. I don't know. Dexter Lumis, Kushida, Pete Dunne, and Roderick Strong, and Cameron Grimes, with the last two being Dexter Lumis and Cameron Grimes, with Dexter Lumis probably pulling the win if they don't have Austin Theory come out there and cost them the match. That would be my final six. So that's something that I see. Now, going to L.A. Knight, with his match tonight, he showed me a little bit that he could do something in the ring. I know he tried a little springboard and all of that, but I thought that was pretty interesting that they gave him this long of a match tonight with Bronson Reed after how they've been pushing him. And I know people questioned about his in-ring skills and in-ring talent, but he showed me a little bit tonight. What do you guys think about that and that final six that I said? And
okay, so with the final six, my only issue with it is I think that it makes more sense if those guys are going to be feuding with each other not to have them in the final, in the gauntlet match also, so you're getting other guys more time. Like, I have no issue with it, and it could easily be true. It really is a 12 where I can see any six coming out of it. I really, really can. But I don't – I think that Kushida and Dunn are going to do each other in – and then be apart from each other. Now, I would still co-sign on what you're doing, and I wouldn't be surprised at all. If it ends up being Lumis who wins, then it'll probably be some kind of pest like Grimes who goes last. As far as Reed versus Knight, I thought that this was kind of a breath of fresh air. I had said when Tom said something about not really knowing what LA Knight works as, I kind of mentioned that he's a little more of a throwback. He's more a methodical heel. And I think that NXT needs something like that. They've had one type of wrestler. That's an oversimplification to a degree for a long time. And I think that they could do with somebody like LA Knight, who's not out there trying to be a world beater in terms of work rate and doing crazy stunts. So I dug that. We already got a little more of the catchphrasing in his pre-match promo, some of the stuff that made him insufferable at times on NWA. He was a face, but he was so annoying. And I think that he will be an incredibly annoying babyface on this show within 6 months. But if he's not, he's going to be a great, great heel. And I'm already bullish on how that could go. So he had his little interview. It was decent, but I just saw enough of him in NWA to be worried. And if you had, you would too. This match could have gone either way. Typically, historically, this is the kind of match that the heel wins, and Reed is a step-up guy. But that's not what they did. They got the undefeated tag off of LA Knight immediately. This went 12:08. Bronson Reed wins with the tsunami. He tried to do the tsunami, and Knight fought it off, and I thought that was that, but he still hit it, and it ended. So 12 minutes and 8 seconds, Reed over Knight, Nate.
So I actually really – I enjoyed the match. I was talking about before, I hadn't really seen much of Eli Drake really at all. I'd kind of watched a couple things and highlights, matches on YouTube, but that's really about it. So this, the past few weeks have really been my first exposure to LA Knight. And I'm really digging what he's got going on here. This seemed like a great showcase, not just for him, but also Bronson Reed. They both really kind of brought it, I thought. There was a couple spots where I feel like Bronson Reed really laid it in, laid some of the slams in. I don't remember the moves off the top of my head. Where I'm writing the hits, and I know you get it, where you're writing the report, I'm writing the hits and misses. I'm not always watching everything that's going on detail for detail, but I definitely like the match overall. I also agree where he seems like he's going to be that kind of over annoying type of a heel right now. I could certainly see that whole baby face working out. I'm kind of thinking more like I think it was you that said that he was like the Rock Light. I keep going back to that reference in my head. And I see a lot of those same parallels, and I kind of like am drawing the same things here. Rock was kind of like that really annoying heel that just became babyface. I could certainly see almost that same sort of a parallel, same sort of trajectory happening here with him. But I feel like his, and again, you could correct me if I'm wrong, but you're a little more familiar with his in-ring work. I feel like he's really going to shine on the mic, and his charisma is really what's going to carry him. Not that he's a bad worker. But he seems like that's what's going to be carrying him, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think it's a bad thing at all.
Yeah, that
you
definitely
said, breath of fresh air, and that's a great phrase.
Tom,
breath of fresh air is exactly right. I have nothing new to say about LA Knight, which is a good thing because I was absolutely glowing about him last week. There are different things that get people over. I do not care if he is not doing triple flips off the top turnbuckle. He is the one person on this entire program who is actually reaching out to me in the audience and trying to make me care about every single little thing that he does. Every week that he is on TV matters because he is making me believe that it matters to him on his journey. His journey that would have felt like it had a ceiling put on it tonight if he wasn't so darn good at those promos and on the heel side of the ledger. So it feels like he can just get that heat back right away somehow, maybe in this battle royal. Speaking of real quick, as an aside, the top six thing that Darrell was asking about, I was actually confused about that. And I was looking it up in the background here because they were advertising it for next week and they were advertising it for TakeOver. And I thought it was the same thing. And I was confused between the nights. Now I get it. If anybody else out there was confused like I was, maybe I was alone, but I guess it's the battle royal in the order of the last six eliminated will determine the order of the six people that have qualified for the gauntlet that will actually take place at TakeOver. I know everybody else on this podcast right now got that. I didn't, but that's why I was confused there. So, but other than that, I agree with Kelly. But I can't argue with Reed going over. I would not call him a step-up guy. I feel like he's a back burner guy, that he's like the soon-to-be North American – perpetually the soon-to-be North American champion. It's like the situation never feels quite right to put the belt on him, but they keep him – they keep him just warm enough that it makes sense to elevate him when they want to pull that trigger. So I expected Knight to lose. I expected Knight to get embarrassed. Not on a shoot level, but I expected his, on a character level, I expected him to be basically squashed, and I was relieved that did not happen. So, I think Reed is still on the same trajectory that he has been for a long, long time. And I am still very, very high on Knight, to the point that if Kelly wasn't telling me, like, hey, man, I watched this guy on NWA for a while, so temper your expectations, I would say, like, take that breath of fresh air all the way to the top. We may be confused, like, wait, what the heck is going on? But pull a Bobby Roode with him and just put the title on him for a different flavor, because his promos are that strong, and I feel like NXT needs something like that. It needs something different soon.
Dude, he's in his element here. Like, we're getting, I think, the best version of him available. I think that it works better heel. All the things that made him irritating as a face are what they're using to make him a heel now. They just get how people perceive that kind of promo, that kind of person, and that kind of puffed up bravado. I really think they're getting the best out of him. I also think he's doing better in a controlled environment, a more controlled environment, because there were nights where on the NWA podcast, when we were doing that, where I just said, was Eli Drake drunk? Like, I hate to say it, but that's how it came off. I'm not going to make that statement. I'm not going to say that he was, but he was unfocused at times on that show, which was such a weird show, and is coming back, I assume, but do I want to jump back on that train? I don't know. I really think I did say temper your expectations, but I was thinking of annoying babyface Eli Drake, and I really, really like direction they're going with him. Darrell?
I love the direction that they're going with him, too. And when Tom said Bobby Roode, I was thinking that's a perfect way to be, because when Bobby Roode was the champ, to me, he was the best heel in the game before they took it off him and moved him up, just because everything he was doing and how his style on the mic and how he wrestled in the ring was different than everybody else. So I think that'll be the perfect way. And then you can figure out how you want to switch him up if you ever down the line want to switch him babyface, where he only used those jokes sparingly, not overbearing and stuff like that, but used that mic skills to get himself over as a babyface. But, okay, my next thing for you guys would be, this is a spoiler for me when it's time for me to do the hits and misses tomorrow for NXT UK in that title match. They finally went ahead and did it and had Tommaso Ciampa come out there. And he say he was really about a new Goldie, and it's the 795-day championship Goldie of the UK title. I'm liking that they're having him challenge for it. I'm liking that they're going to have this match. And I hate that people have to go up it against him and get swollen up and have to deal with them slaps, because he gets very brutal with those slaps. I'm interested in seeing how that match is going to go, and I'm glad that they're giving the UK title a bigger stage, especially somebody who almost about to have it for, could have it for over 1,000 days. So that's interesting. How do you guys like it? And what are you guys thinking? What should be the outcome ending of that match?
Oh, Walter will murder a fool. He will. His chops are disgusting. I love them so, so much. Walter beats Drake Maverick in 25 seconds tonight. Ciampa comes out for the challenge. I also love that it was ref stoppage here, that they just went full on brutal with him, and it was ref stoppage because Drake passed out. Ciampa comes out to make the challenge. There's a beatdown, 3-on-1 beatdown, and Walter says it's on. I don't think Ciampa will or should win this championship. I don't think he will, because I don't think he's going over there, and I don't think he should, because I think that it should be a UK guy that goes over when this is done. I also think that he won't, because I think that part of the way this happens could have to do with Timothy Thatcher, and maybe they're just going to move Timothy Thatcher into this faction also, just to pay off the fact that he was in Ringkampf with these guys, Ringkampf, out in the British Indies and elsewhere. So I think Walter will probably win this match. I thought that anyway. Certainly I thought it even more so when it was a non-title match, because I don't think you should have somebody going over the champion, especially a champion of that many days. So looking forward to it. It's going to be mean and it's going to be sick and painful to watch, but it's going to be great. But yeah, Walter's going to win that. Tom.
You nailed it. I echo your thoughts. The segment was exactly what it should have been, from the ref stoppage to Ciampa's challenge. I thought this was the right next piece.
Nate.
I'm going to pretty much leave it at that. I don't have a whole heck of a lot to add. I like the ref stoppage. I couldn't actually believe this was a match that was happening. So I figured I'm actually surprised he lasted 25 seconds. It didn't even seem that long.
I guess it didn't.
That's my only really addition to the whole thing.
I saw that this match was going to exist as I was looking to before every show, I look at what matches are going to be on it on WWE.com because I have to make the header for the recap. And when I saw Walter versus Drake Maverick, a huge smile came over my lips because I was like, that's going to be hilarious. Just hilarious. And it was. It was a lot of fun, and I will take as much of Walter as I am given. Darrell?
Okay. Now, having Kushida come out there and Jordan Devlin continue on with having big challenges every week, every time he's on the mat, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the match. I even enjoyed the thing that came afterwards, and I guess now that match is being switched to a ladder match. Like Shawn Michaels and Razor Ramon when they both had two titles and they put it up on the line. And if they do it like they did Razor versus Shawn, you could have a series of matches between the two guys. I think that would help strengthen that title back up to where it was when they first had put it on Jordan, and then when Escobar first got it and how strong it was. I'm interested to see that match, and it was crazy that Shawn Michaels came out there. And also, y'all didn't mention how they teased Shawn versus Adam Cole with that stare down before Adam Cole went out there. But other than that, I enjoyed what they did. I'm interested to see how they're going to do this and who will come out to be the first winner of that match. What do you guys think of everything?
I loved this. I loved how straightforward it was that they took Shawn Michaels, one of the best wrestlers on the mic ever, and they just kept it simple with him, and just his actions spoke louder than words. And as soon as his music played, the second it played, I knew what was about to happen, and I was like, why didn't I know this was going to be a ladder match? Like, how did it not occur to me? It should have been the most obvious thing in the world that this would be a ladder match with both championships up there, just like SummerSlam and WrestleMania, or I can't remember which one had both championships up. That might have been SummerSlam. It doesn't matter. First we got Devlin talking about Kushida. And Devlin, if there was any shades of gray left, he made it clear. He's like, Kushida, I even like you. He was still kind of a prick because that's Devlin's act. But he said he likes Kushida. Devlin playing face at this point. Kushida made a little warning to Devlin. He said, you made this challenge and now you have to deal with the greatest technical wrestler. So in case you're not picking up that he is going to face Pete Dunne, he's just saying the words greatest technical wrestler. And then we got this match, which was technically the main event match because it was the last one. Kushida versus Devlin. This went 9:26. Devlin wins with a roll-up after some shenanigans with Legado del Fantasma. If I had anything to complain about, it would just be that if you're going to have Legado come out there anyway, then why not just have Kushida go over? Because it's not a match for the championship. But maybe they just didn't want to establish Kushida as a potential challenger, so it just made more sense to have the championship, the champion win. And I'm not all about champions losing anyway. So whatever, a minor sin at best, but I really thought that keeping it simple with this angle with Shawn rolling the ladder in there, I really thought it was pitch perfect. Nate?
You know, it's funny. I didn't quite pick up on the fact that it was going to be a ladder match until he pretty much opened, lifted up the apron, and I saw the ladder. I put the that was like the first time that I even thought of like Razor Ramon and that whole thing, the ladder match and everything. Because I know he's, he's kind of showed up as a quasi authority figure in NXT sort of in the past, and I was kind of just a figuring, oh, we saw William Regal once tonight, then maybe, you know. But yeah, as soon as I saw that, you know, I kind of figured that's exactly where this was going, ladder match. I actually didn't even, it didn't even occur to me that there were two Intercontinental titles at the time until you brought it up. So that, that even makes it, you know, that was one detail I forgot. So, that makes it kind of a little bit more serendipitous there. I like that. I don't really have a whole heck of a lot to add really from what you already said either, on this. It's an angle I have been looking forward to. For a while now, haven't really been quite sure how I felt about Devlin coming back right now, where they're both kind of been portrayed as heels. But I don't know. I'm intrigued by this, and I think they might be able to pull this off. The addition of the ladder match, where they're kind of both, you know, it's more or less a tweener and a heel right now. I feel like that ladder match just kind of will almost make it, I don't want to say make up for it. I don't know what the word I'm looking for is, the phrasing I'm looking for is, but you kind of make it a little less weird that it's not, you know, a face and a heel and it's a tweener and a heel. Kind of take that, almost like, hey, here, look at the kitty, look in the other direction, distraction. There we go. It's a bit of a distraction from that. So it's at least my immediate thought anyway, but that being a distraction doesn't take away from the fact that I can't wait to watch the match. I think it is going to be a spectacle for sure.
There's going to be a Spanish fly somewhere in this match, and hopefully neither one of them dies as a result of it. Tom,
fingers crossed.
No comment. You guys covered it beautifully. I was thinking pretty much all of the same things. I don't like that they gave Devlin the excuse to lose and still had Kushida's shoulders pinned to the mat. But I did also pick up on Kushida saying, I'm the greatest technical wrestler in NXT. And on the very same show, Pete Dunne cutting a similar promo saying, I'm the greatest technical wrestler in the world. That just plays right into the match that we've been anticipating between the two of them. I also liked Shawn Michaels not saying a word. And at first I was thinking along the lines of Nate, like, okay, this doesn't really change the match all that much though. Like adding a ladder to this doesn't excite me anymore than I was already not particularly excited for this. And then I remembered the two belts hanging above the ring for Shawn and Razor. And last week, Nate and I were arguing for both champions keeping their cruiserweight championships and maybe Devlin's being rebranded over on the UK brand. Darrell did mention that the Heritage Cup is being defended by A-Kid as if it were a title, which I wasn't aware of at the time. So that does complicate matters because it seems like they already kind of have a mid-card thing going on over there. But I just envision both guys at the top of a ladder or two different ladders, and there are two belts, and they can both come down with one, and then, you know, Regal and Johnny Saint are like, oh boy, what do we do? And then that's what they do.
All right, Darrell, do you have one more for us?
Okay. Number one, in the first match, they had Dakota Kai get a win over Io Shirai, another one up is on Io Shirai, since that's going to be the main event of night one. I'm still thinking that Io is going to pull out the victory of that match and be expecting a big challenger coming when NXT shows back up the next week. And I'm still thinking that Dakota Kai could potentially get a chance at pulling double duty that week and getting a match at WrestleMania. For the I guess main show women tag team titles. I don't know. How do you guys feel about that, and what do you guys think about the match of itself?
Okay, so the opener was Io Shirai and Zoe Stark against Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez. Very, very by-the-numbers stuff here. You knew that the heels were going to win this because Raquel's got to get her one last it just looked like a monster one last time going into this match. She wins at 11:52 over Zoe Stark with the choke slam. They did some fun power stuff with Gonzalez and Stark. And yes, so indeed, the heels go over here. And I would love for Kai and Gonzalez to win the main roster women's tag titles, but I would hate for Dakota not to be on NXT anymore because I'm not watching the main roster very often. That would really bum me out, but she deserves it. So there you go. I really, really am digging Zoe Stark, and I hope they find the balance. It's a really crowded table right now, and I hope that they find the balance and don't damage her too much before it's time. She's a back burner project, just like Bronson Reed right now, where hopefully they strike the right balance and they can move her into a prominent position when there is space to do so. So that was one of two tag team women's tag team matches we'll be talking about tonight. So on that opener, Tom.
Yeah, I think that we've now seen enough from Zoe Stark, enough evidence has accumulated that I can say fairly confidently that, I mean, sure, she's probably the fourth best wrestler in the ring tonight, but, you know, definitely behind Io and Dakota anyway. But after that debut against Valentina Feroz, that went, it was rocky enough. It was the promise was there, but it was rocky enough that I was like, okay, this is the lane she should stay in for a while. And then they elevated her to having, you know, relatively lengthy matches week after week. I think enough evidence has accrued now that we can say that, you know, she fits in just fine. And that debut was the rockiness of the debut was maybe a fluke. So I still enjoy seeing Zoe on the screen, like seeing whatever journey it is that she is on. And the whole tag team championship thing that they did with Dakota and Raquel was weird, but parlayed into Io walking right, you know, just all about business, walking up to Raquel and being like, all right, haven't beaten you yet, step up. I think that the build to this match has been handled quite nicely. And tonight was just another logical step in that direction. So I think the finish is very, very much in question. I would have to rack my brain quite a bit to think how I think this is going to end. It could really go either way.
Yeah, this is my biggest question mark for all of TakeOver at this point. Nate?
I agree. It's again, I don't have a whole heck. I kind of feel like a broken record tonight. I don't have a whole heck of a lot to add. I feel like this is a kind of building up to be a kind of a paint by numbers show. A lot of the things that are happening are kind of just, they're just kind of happening. I don't really need to kind of dig too much deeper, I don't think, at the moment. So I don't have a whole heck of a lot to add. I guess I will just say that Zoe Stark, I am really impressed with what she's got. The first match, like we said, you know, kind of a little bit rocky. But you know, every week since then, she's certainly seemed like she's improved, or at least gotten more comfortable. You know, you chalk it up to nerves or what have you. But she certainly seems like she belongs. There were a few sequences tonight that she pulled off with the other girls in the ring, and it looked smooth. It looked like she could hang, and she carries herself like somebody that belongs in that upper main card, you know, main event level scene. So I can see it's clear that they have some big stuff in mind for her. So I'm high on it. So yeah, go from there.
All right, let's go to another match, that being Karrion Kross versus Oney Lorcan. This one by Karrion Kross in 9:16. Oney got a little more offense than I would have guessed. I'm not sad about it. It was fine, because watching Oney on offense almost kind of saved this, made something out of it. But yes, Lorcan more or less is the sympathetic figure here. He's in a two-man faction now, and we're not even seeing him and Dunn interact anymore. and he's got different gear now. Are they just going to quietly end this faction that never even got a name? I'm very, very curious about that. And Oni and Birch are going to be faces, and people are going to say, but you did all that stuff. And they're like, I don't remember that at all. Like, 5 months, champions, us? Does that sound right? Because it doesn't sound right, because they were really not on TV very much as champs. So, yeah, Karrion Kross wins with his forearm to the or elbow maybe to the back of the neck. Finn Balor comes out and says he's cold, and Karrion Kross fights with too much emotion, and that is a fair assessment after last week when he got all crazy when Scarlett was very obviously accidentally hurt, and so I thought that this was a reasonable next step. I don't know. Balor's been having some of the greatest matches of his life, but I really, really hope he can get something here in this match out of Kross. This is the NXT Championship match, but it is by no means being treated as a major, major attraction. It's on night two, and it's the main event of night two, but it really seems like all the stuff they're really, really pushing is night one, that they're giving USA all of the really important stuff, and Peacock gets, you know, some decent stuff, a good enough show to be TakeOver, I suppose. I'll have to look at that again, and we'll see how it plays out when it actually plays out, but it seems like the stuff that they gave the lion's share of the hard sell to is going on USA, Nate.
Is kind of the way that it seems, that it is going to be, and I think in a way it kind of makes sense too, because, you know, even though Peacock is kind of the new toy, if you will. I mean, I think probably the bulk of your viewership is probably still going to be on USA, I would assume. So I think that kind of does make sense. So correct. It's Thursday night. It's on Peacock and still Wednesday in USA, correct? It's not the other way around.
That's right.
Okay. I wanted to make, for some reason, like I got in my head at one point that it was the other way around. But it kind of seems like that's the way it's going to go. I also forgot what match we're talking about.
Cool. Karrion Kross versus Oni Lorcan.
Thank you.
I mean,
it
was the forgettable match of the show. So,
no, yeah. I guess I will let you guys peek behind the curtain. I'm in the middle of kind of cleaning out my basement because in the morning I have somebody coming over to rip apart my desk and build a custom desk for me. And I've been a little bit behind in cleaning, so I'm multitasking tonight. But Oni Lorcan and Karrion Kross. So yeah, I think you said it earlier. Oni Lorcan definitely got some more offense in than I expected, and I'm also not complaining. I'm a massive Oni Lorcan fan. I'm not complaining seeing him, lay waste to somebody, here and there. I shouldn't say lay waste, but get some decent offense in on somebody that's going up against the NXT champion at the next TakeOver event. So I selfishly liked it, but at the same time, it had me scratching my head a little bit because, yes, Oni has been historically a jobber. He hasn't really been somebody that has been somebody, really within the company. And, I guess in a way, putting the tag team titles on him and Birch was almost like, in a much smaller way, throwing the WWE championship on Jinder Mahal. It just kind of came out of nowhere. It wasn't like, you said that they weren't on TV a whole lot. They were. They were actually on TV quite a bit more than they would have been anyway, but they were on TV quite a bit. They were even in main events, but the NXT Tag Team Championships were just, they were just kind of a prop to make them look a little bit more intimidating, more menacing than they actually had been portrayed. The titles were just completely devoid from the tag team title scene for months and months and months. So in a way, I'm kind of glad that this is where we're at. You kind of got stripped. I hate to say that because I love Birch and Lorcan, but I'm kind of glad that we're at this point where we're done with them as the champs, and we can kind of get back to a more traditional tag team scene. Because the tag team scene, you know, it was starting to rebuild. We're starting to get a more fleshed out tag team division, and then we kind of got to the whole Pat McAfee angle and the stable that was never named and everything. So. I kind of went off on a little bit of a tangent, but overall, I like this match. I like this match selfishly, but for all of the reasons I just stated, I feel like this almost kind of took a little bit of the wind out of the sails across, because why was he somebody that's going up against the champ, allowing somebody that is kind of that low on the card to get that much offense on him? So unless they're going to be portraying Oney Lorcan as, more of a player, in the upper card here, in the weeks and months to come, I feel like it was just weird that this match went as long as it did. And there was as much back and forth as it did.
Oney brought it tonight, because when Finn and Cross were facing each other, all I could see were the insane welts on the left side
of Cross
from the palm strikes. And I thought, are these receipts? Like, are these receipts from Birch getting injured? Tom?
You guys covered it well. I appreciated that Lorcan was more than just a squashy here. And for the post-match promo, I will say that I thought it was a bad move for Cross to double down on last week's bogus angle that this feud did not need, because it's about the title anyway. But I actually ended up appreciating it, because for once I appreciated Finn's side of it, because like you said, Kelly, Finn used that poor focus from Cross to play on what people from Cross's character, I should say, to play on what people have been saying about Cross himself, as far as, you know, he used the word sloppy. So I thought that actually ended up taking what I thought should have just been about the title and added a little bit of extra spice on it going into TakeOver. Oh, which, you know, of course, you mentioned that it is the night 2 main event, which reminds me that I meant to say about Io and Raquel, I am pleasantly surprised that I am wrong, or I was wrong last week when I predicted that Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly would main event night, I think I said night 1, instead of the rightful main event of Io and Raquel. So I'm glad that got to that spot.
Well, they are calling it co-main event of night 1 now. So we'll see which one goes on last. Do you want to email us? Do that. pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. JB, this is Jared Buhager, says, hi, team. It's JB from Detroit. I'd argue that the biggest casualties of the COVID era have been the men's NXT tag titles. Do you agree? Since Riddle and Thatcher unceremoniously lost the titles to Imperium, they have been in total limbo, in my opinion. Imperium, Breezango, and Birch and Lorcan until this week are all good in their own right, but the titles haven't been defended much on branded NXTs or takeovers, and they haven't been treated as of much significance. Since I'm sending this email in before the show and I haven't heard Regal's update on the status of the vacated titles, in your opinions, what is the best way to jumpstart the titles to feel of high importance again? Who should hold the titles first, and who should be the first major feud? How should things be laid out for the next 6 months? As always, love to show and go VIP. You know, normally I would say, hey, have a tournament, but oh my God, no. we just did a whole lot of that. I think that this would have been a fatal four-way. They had these teams all kind of interacting, and I think that's the way this would have gone. I would have said that MSK were going to win this match. Now that it is a triple threat and the champs aren't there, I actually think it's going to be Grizzled Young Veterans, because I think they would prefer to have MSK win a match from sitting champions, because it feels like it's overcoming more. And maybe that's wrong. Maybe I'm reading too much of it into it, and it'll be MSK anyway. But I've shifted because of the Birch injury to saying that that GYV will win this. Kevin Catani says, salutations, gents. I hope this email finds y'all well. I think the TakeOver card is shaping up nicely, and I love the North American title tonight stipulation. I hope the build matches the early excitement. Having just learned about the tag title situation, is this the time that Durrell and others will finally get to watch GYV earn the titles? Also, as most of the card is now known, what is one curveball each of you think might happen to take over? Thanks, as always, for your time. Office hours are now over. The Professor, P.S., go VIP. Kevin P. Catani, Ph.D. Yeah, I think the curveball is grizzled young veterans. A situation like the Gargano one is, it's ripe for curveballs, but I don't know how much the curveball would be him losing, and I just don't see that happening. Raquel would be a small curveball, maybe just a slider. I don't know. It would be a mild surprise to me, and any surprise is just because Io's been the champion for so damn long. Tom?
Is Finn retaining a curveball? Because I would say that that is quite plausible at this point. If not, I would, you know, I'm really reaching here, but I wonder, because, you know, just thinking of what would actually qualify as a curveball, maybe some sort of weirdness in the gauntlet that ends up with Josh Briggs finally debuting and challenging Gargano. Although we've already agreed that Gargano is going to win, and do you want to debut Josh Briggs that way? Do I think enough of what I've seen of Josh Briggs to even worry about that? Not really. He could just have a good showing against Gargano. But yeah, and I think going with the triple threat tag at TakeOver is a tell that they were going to do the Fatal 4-Way that we were anticipating. And it does still feel like MSK's to win. But to me, it is weird that they did not, even though we're predicting Dunn versus Kushida in some capacity, even if it's not on the TakeOver card, it is weird to me that they didn't just sub Dunn in. And even if they were planning on taking the titles off of them, just go ahead and, you know, you can protect Dunn in that situation very, very easily without stripping the titles. And maybe even that fantasy world of not stripping the titles and subbing in Dunn for Birch and then keeping the titles on them fits a little bit. I mean, it's an audible, and you're changing whatever Dunn's plan is at this point. But it sort of fills what we were talking about re-elevating the tag titles, like JB is asking about, the way that we were thinking maybe would be the way to go with Ciampa and Thatcher winning them.
It's amazing how often our other show, Tom, NXT 8 years back, and the current product have little parallels. The tag team champions there 8 years ago were Adrian Neville and Oliver Gray, and Oliver Gray just got injured and is going to be out 6 months, longer than Birch is, I think. And they haven't vacated the titles yet. They haven't said what's going to happen, but that is a show that we just recorded today. Just strange to me that that's happened a few times, but it's wrestling, so it'd probably be more strange if there weren't parallels. So anyway, Nate.
Okay, cool. I'm not muted. I'll hit Kevin's email first. I think he's right, and we are going to probably see Grizzled Young Vets earn the titles here. It kind of just seems like it's their time, and you know we've been talking about them winning the titles since before COVID. So, I'd like to see them be able to, finally capture those titles and kind of almost finish that journey, if you will. Let's see, a curveball. God, I'm not really sure. I've been trying to think of one, since the email really came in. I'm not really sure, to be completely honest with you, what a curveball might be that they throw our way. It may be something to do with if it isn't Finn retaining, because I kind of have a feeling like Tom was saying cross going over there, but, it might have something to do with the Battle Royal, or not necessarily the Battle Royals next week, but the outcome of the Battle Royal might be a bit of a swerve, but I don't know. So I really can't think of one, and I'm not going to just keep harping on it. So there's that. Then switching back over to JB's email, I do think that he's correct. In terms of the titles, in titles anyway, which titles have kind of suffered the most from COVID, the men's tag team division or at least during this era, maybe not necessarily from COVID, but I mean, the men's tag team division has really been, we've talked about it quite a bit. They've, you know, really floundered. They started to really kind of rebuild, you know, before Oni Lorcan and Danny Burch won the titles, but you know, it still wasn't that much of a rebuild. And I thought the Dusty Classic was going to be a launching pad for that. But it really, you know, kind of didn't seem to be. You know, Oni Lorcan, Danny Burch continue to have, you know, continue to be the champions until today. So, you got to kind of figure that then. So, other than that, yeah, I don't really have a whole heck of a lot else to add. So, we'll move on.
There was one other match that was Ember Moon and Shotzi Blackheart versus Mercedes Martinez and Aaliyah. This was supposed to be a popcorn enemy match with Aaliyah and Jesse Kamea, but Kamea got hurt also. So we instead get Mercedes Martinez being paid by the Robert Stone brand to do this match in a little scene where she said, okay, new deal, this is half the price, and you pay me the other half after the match. Aaliyah, of course, gets pinned after an eclipse from Ember Moon. A lot of eclipses look wonderful. This one looked like it didn't quite work totally. Aaliyah, in this particular match, and every now and then, in general, just kind of works at half speed and throws these clotheslines that are super, super slow, and I can't figure out why this still happens sometimes, but it does. This went 4:01, which would be the short match in a lot of weeks, but was much longer than Maverick and Walter. So we got that segment setting it up. We got the match itself, and then we got Ember and Shotzi celebrating in the back, being loud. Indy and Candice, Indy Hartwell and Candice LeRae happen by and say they need some better competition like them. Shotzi laughs loud and dismissively. That's not a face move, Shotzi. And then we get the don't be jelly line from, I think it was Ember who yelled it back at them. But at any rate, one of them did. You know, when you get together with your best friend and you laugh loud and you make fun of everybody and talk about how much lesser they are of you, that's fun, but it doesn't make you a good guy. That's what's happening here, and I feel like we're just seeing these two hang out and kind of be mean girls, and I keep hoping that they just bring them into a more likable context, because everything else is working. They're both great in the ring, and I like the dynamic of the two of them together, and I like the idea of them being babyface tag team champions, Tom.
So this match was a match that happened. I guess the best thing I can say for it is that I'm glad Mercedes Martinez still exists. And yeah, it feels like every time they give talking segments to Shotzi and Ember as a tandem, it's dragging my perception of Ember down further and further. So hopefully that doesn't continue. I'm sure it is going to continue, and it's going to continue to be aggravating, but where, how did I phrase it before? I think I said that the NXT Women's Tag Championships could very easily be used as a way of recontextualizing the women's title scene, like who's basically next up once they drop the tag belts. But it could also very, very easily be used as a ceiling, and I'm worried that's what it is for Ember, because she has higher potential than that. But every week since she, you know, every week for the past 3 weeks, she's looked worse and worse. And I guess I don't think they announced the women's tag title match, but this feels like TakeOver Night 2 to me. So maybe we'll just get the official announcement next week. I mean, at this point, with whatever you do, you want to call it the NXT Women's Tag Division, there isn't much of anything to speak of. So Candice and Indy basically just walking up and saying, hey, we want in, it's fine.
Yeah. Does three teams a division make, with the champions not really being a team? I don't know. I guess if there's two heel teams and one face team, the faces should be the champions, because they've got more potential challengers than the heels do. So whatever, Nate.
Yeah, I kind of have to agree. I mean, it was kind of just a match that was here. I was glad to see Mercedes Martinez back on TV. It's been a while. I was trying to think of even actually the last. I meant to look it up when the last time we actually saw her was, and I forgot to do that. But I mean, it seems like it's been at least a couple months. So I'm definitely glad to see her back on TV, even if it is something, you know, kind of weird with the Robert Stone brand. But I almost kind of want them to lead into this whole mercenary thing. You know, mercenary for hire. You need a, you know, almost like the APA back in the Attitude Era. You needed a little bit of muscle. Eh, just throw them a little bit of money, throw them some, or, you know, some beer and some cigars or something, and they'll be that muscle for you. So, I kind of like that. I don't know if that's the direction they'll keep going with her. If this is a one-off thing, but if they did lean into that, I would not be disappointed. Other than that, I don't have a whole heck of a lot to add.
Yes, very happy to see her. At the very least, we saw her on February 14th on TakeOver, but I don't know if we've seen her since. I don't remember. She ate the pin that night, and I just don't remember if we've seen her. You know who I didn't think of at all once tonight was Toni Storm. She had her big feud on TV, and just this second, I was like, oh, yeah, her. But okay, how soon we forget. Jack Argyle also emailed us. Announce team and Triple H's role. I don't have to read the subject. Hey, guys, haven't emailed in for a while, so nice to be able to speak to you guys again. I hope you're well. We've been pretty negative about the show last few months, and I've always been pretty negative about the announce team. I thought Beth really struggled for a while when Mauro was there, and I never really liked Vic Joseph's work during his little spell on Raw. I love Mauro and love to see him come back at some point, but I always felt Beth really struggled to get any words in while he was there. And since she's come back to the arena to do commentary live, I think she's really been hitting the right notes. And all three of them seem to have a really good chemistry that I feel they didn't quite have with Mauro. What do you guys think? I will stop right there and say I completely agree. It was very difficult for Beth to get a word in. Mauro, the best thing about him is his enthusiasm and how much he wants to talk about what he's seeing. And that was also a liability for whoever was on the team with him. And I think that was probably never going to really improve as far as his interplay with Beth. And I really, really like this team. And part of it might be because Vic is so milquetoast. Secondly, I feel like every few months I always email in and ask about the future of the WWE and would Triple H take over. I feel as time goes on, it's more and more likely he will never get that chance, or if he does, it won't be for long. When I saw Andrade had been released this week and posted his goodbyes while specifically mentioning his thanks to Triple H, Heyman, and Regal, I felt quite sad knowing this man had the backing of three very important guys behind the scenes but still could not be used. I saw months ago that Triple H had asked for Aleister Black to return but got turned down, and he hasn't been seen since October. I'm sure they tried to get Andrade back to NXT. I wonder if Triple H doesn't have the power to get people back to NXT, then what power does he really have behind the scenes? Most of the main roster have worked with him at NXT, and most only have positives to say about him. I just hope for the future of WWE, Vince steps aside soon. Otherwise, we will see more talented wrestlers being released in the near future. Lastly, just a random question, which I think could add to the Mania Week. What if NXT took a note out of the UFC playbook and opened up their own Hall of Fame, inducting one member each year and one match? For example, putting Sasha Banks versus Bayley as the first ever match into the Hall of Fame would be incredible. Who would you put as the first ever inducted into an NXT Hall of Fame? Thanks, guys. Keep up the great work and stay safe. Jack A. from Swansea, Wales. An NXT Hall of Fame is not something that I think that they will do, but for the sake of fun, certainly Sasha and Bayley would be a contender. Cesaro versus Sami Zayn would be a contender. The Fatal 4-Way at TakeOver Fatal 4-Way would be a contender. Shinsuke Nakamura versus Sami Zayn. The first 2 out of 3 falls between Gargano and Cole. And there are probably some tag team matches that I would have to think hard about. I think that if they were to do it, I think they'd start with Sasha and Bayley because it was really, really a landmark thing. And that would be the most sensible thing to start out with. And the first member of the NXT Hall of Fame, I guess you could just keep it simple and go with Seth Rollins, their first champion, because he's still a big deal. He's still still with the company, so maybe you might as well do it, Tom.
I also have the relatively dry answer of first inducting the first champions, singles champions, that is, being those being Seth Rollins and Paige. And Seth can, if he's still a heel at the time, he could use it for heat. He could gloat about it. That said, I'm not super thrilled about the idea. I'm not entirely opposed to it. I think maybe I'm putting too much stock into, I mean, I'm definitely not putting too much stock into the, what the WWE Hall of Fame is, or maybe what it has become, if it ever had credibility when it was a pretty elite echelon to become a part of. And in a relative sense, it still is, but you know, it's definitely reached the point where it reached the point a number of years ago where you're clamoring to fill out the card, as it were, year after year. And the thing that I wonder if I'm putting too much stock in is that quote, and I forget who said it first. I remember Triple H saying it, but I don't want to go as far as to credit him with saying it first, is that the two things you really remember in your career are your first championship win and when you get inducted in the Hall of Fame. And I wonder if an NXT Hall of Fame would cheapen that. At the same time, I also remember when I think it was during the Undisputed Era Pat McAfee feud, when there was something going on. I think, did Pat McAfee burn the Undisputed Era flag or something? And my argument was the one that I have so often with NXT, that they establish stuff and pay it off way too quickly. They don't let stuff simmer and really, really generate heat. They're not patient. And I said, well, why don't we do something like have, you know, these flags hanging from the ceiling as an established thing. And when Pat McAfee goes and tears down the Undisputed Era flag, that means something. Maybe you could do something similar with when you get inducted in the NXT Hall of Fame, you get sort of like your jersey being hung from the ceiling or whatever it is, in a sports arena, you get your flag put up there, or you get a commemorative, I don't know. You know, they've got these posters on the wall in the performance center that are of classic WWE moments. Maybe switch those out for NXT moments. What I am totally opposed to, speaking of NXT moments, or as opposed to people, is inducting matches into a Hall of Fame. That goes completely against my idea of what matches should strive to be. I've talked about this before, the commentary thing. Where do I want to start with it? I am much more forgiving of Mauro swallowing up so much oxygen when he was on commentary with Beth specifically, because seeing it in person when he knew he wasn't on camera, it was like he was conducting a three-person symphony, and he would lean over from side to side, from Nigel to Beth, and he would put a hand on a shoulder here or there to really cue them when he was going to let them in to say things. And Beth, she always walks in with this huge, she probably still does, walk in with this huge stack of notes of like, here's all the stuff that I'm going to say. It's almost like comical, like you'd expect a pratfall where she's going to trip and they go flying all over the place, because it's not just one spiral notebook. It's a big stack. So I feel like she really, really did her homework to be able to fit in a couple of choice lines here and there. And that was the start that she needed to grow from. And Mauro really facilitated that. So that's just my perception of that. Not really a dichotomy, because Nigel was there, but you know what I mean? And then, you know, what works against me in this case is that we did see during this phase that I'm talking about a couple shows where Mauro was not there and Beth really came alive on those nights. Unfortunately, Beth, I don't feel has been consistent. I don't want to be too mean to her, but I really don't feel like she has risen too far above. Again, she's had her moments, like I said, but I don't think she's risen too far above where she started from, and the little lines that she throws in here and there don't usually seem to add much, unless it's regarding someone like Xia Li, who she genuinely was in the ring with, you know, in the battle in the Royal Rumble. Boy, I guess I'm the first person to comment on the middle part of the email regarding Triple H. I was kind of hoping you guys would touch on it first so I could say, oh, and you covered that perfectly well, so I won't add to it. Because honestly, at this point, I've got nothing new to say about it. It's been stagnating for so long that it's barely on my mind anymore. So I'm sorry that that is a very lame way to respond to that question, which is a valid question to ask, you know, as we continue to move forward and things continue to change. But I just I don't feel like enough has really changed, unless I really want to look deeply at the fact that the main roster is just totally bonkers right now, even more than usual, to the point where it's like, okay, at what point do they just put McMahon in a straitjacket? But that's ridiculous talk. So, you know, I won't go too hard on that idea.
You know, I'm so used to that question and it just always being something I think about and just always thinking, God, he's just got to go away. I just didn't even remember it after I read the question. I just didn't even remember that part of it. And I have nothing to add there either. I wish that he would let go, but I don't think that he ever will. I think that he will do it until he dies. Nate?
You know, I agree. I think he's going to do it until he dies. I think the one thing that might have started to detract him was going to be the XFL before COVID, because we did start seeing like he was showing up to fewer and fewer shows and things like that. He was kind of taking some of the responsibilities, even though he was saying he wasn't going to relinquish any of his duties or whatever. He started to a little bit. excuse me. Oh, wow, that was weird. Anyway, sorry about that. I think that might have been like the one thing that might have started to detract him. He might have realized he couldn't have run both the XFL and the WWE and maybe started to lean one way or another. But obviously that's not the way things panned out. Who knows with behind the scenes? I mean, we're not behind the scenes, so nobody really knows exactly what goes on back there, you know, unless there's a leak or something along those lines. In terms of what kind of power he has, I mean, I don't know more than I do. Let's put it that way, over people you work with. So hey, there we go. With the announcer stuff. So first of all, I gotta say I like Beth. I wouldn't say that she's, you know, the greatest announcer in the world. I would say she's a little bit of a, and I hate saying this, but I think she's like a step above mediocre. But I have to give her a lot of credit. I feel like she has definitely, I feel like she's come a long way. I know Tom said he doesn't really feel like she's made a lot of progress, but I feel like she does. I feel like she does have a little bit more confidence, where she seemed a little bit more timid before. Definitely still like super scripted and all of that, but I got to give her credit. You know, stepping into a role that she's never been in before, she's never thought about before, and I think she's doing a pretty good job. Morrow, I absolutely love Morrow. I love his commentary. Every once in a while, you know, I'll see it. Yeah, and I'm not a huge like MMA fan, but every once in a while, you know, I'll see a clip on Reddit or something like that, and you know, I hear his voice in in an MMA fight. I'm like, Morrow, I miss you, man. So you know, it's cool. I'd love to see him come back. I think with the whole thing with Beth, I kind of agree with what you were saying there, Tom, because you've talked about that in the past where he seemed like he was kind of trying to either be a ringleader or director of the announce team and kind of, lead them and whatnot. So I feel like that was probably his intent all the way around. But I think that excitement, which is what I think the people that love Morrow, what we really love about him, it's probably a little bit tough to work with, try and get a word in edgewise and things like that. Even if he is trying to rein it in, because he does tend to be a little bit explosive in what he's talking about. There's that. And the last question about the Hall of Fame, in terms of inducting a match, I'm with Tom. I don't think I'd want to see them start inducting a match, but if we were going to be doing an NXT Hall of Fame, we'll entertain it. One member, one person in one match. So I think I think the match honestly should probably be Sasha and Bayley for a lot of reasons. I think that put a lot of eyes on the NXT product in and of itself, but not only that, there was a giant milestone in women's wrestling, period. That was a match, I mean, I look back on very, very fondly. If it wasn't that match, then, you know, there's a bunch of others that I can think of. I know Kelly started, you know, naming a few of them off, like Sammy and Nakamura. You know, the ladder match between Neville and, why is his name escaping me?
Bo Salad.
What's that?
Bo Dallas. His name was accidentally said as Bo Salad by Byron Saxton on NXT about 8 years ago.
Oh, so, that's fantastic. That's fantastic. But yeah, you know, that was I thought that was a great match. But I think it does. That would probably go at least. That's the first match that comes to my mind, even before you guys are saying it. I feel like that was a big, big milestone match for not just NXT, but women's wrestling in general. And then one member from, you know, we're going to be doing some sort of a, you know, NXT Hall of Fame, somebody in there. My mind did go to Seth Rollins. I also thought about Roman Reigns, considering, you know, his level of success in NXT. But I'm also kind of starting to think a little bit more of like who had like a massive, massive impact in NXT. And
Roman did almost nothing in NXT.
He had like such a small little run in NXT. So, you know, so that I don't think that would really fly, but I could certainly see WWE trying to spin it like he did, you know, just to kind of give him one extra thing, one extra accolade. He could be the NXT Hall of Fame, you know, first one, whatever. You know, I'm kind of starting to think about, Finn Balor, honestly, even though he's like, I don't know exactly what the criteria would be for NXT Hall of Fame, but like, you know, Finn Balor being a 2-time champion, then you've got people like, you know, Gargano and Ciampa. I mean, they're still wrestling, but I mean, they've had such a storied history and their legacy intertwined within NXT that I feel like one of them should certainly be in the conversation too. You know, if in terms of the criteria involves people still wrestling, but this is a hypothetical, so that's my answer.
Well, all right, folks, that is our show for March 24th. Is that right? March 24th? I don't remember anymore because Tom and I are trying to bank shows for NXT 8 years back because we're about to do this Peacock switchover, and we don't know how long it's going to take before all these NXT shows are on there. So we're actually recorded all the way to April 10th, and we're going to try to bank two more next week. So I don't know what month it is or what year it is anymore, folks, because I'm living in several eras at the same time. I'm Kelly Wells. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or Spooky Milk Games. Nate, who are you?
Well, I did know today was March 24th because in approximately 4 minutes, it is my birthday, March 25th. So say happy birthday to me, I guess. I wasn't going to mention it, but I did. So why not? I feel like you set me up for it. I am Nate Lindberg. You can find me at Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I do the NXT hits and misses, the SmackDown All Perspective Report, and I just made my debut on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post shows past Friday. So if you haven't listened to it. Let me know how I did, and we'll go from there. But yeah.
Well, there you go. I would say happy birthday, but that would be dishonest because we're still 3 minutes away, and I will use that time to think of why I'm not going to say it to you tomorrow either. Tom, who are you?
And because I am such a birthday Grinch, I will instead say congratulations on doing fine, fine work on your post-show, your Wade post-show debut, you Edge fan, you. And I am at Tom Stout. That is where you can get at me with all of your concerns for my well-being, which to certain individuals listening probably sounds like I'm calling you out. But I had quite a handful of people reaching out to me after last week's show where I just unloaded on how awful I have felt NXT has been lately, particularly that episode. Thankfully, tonight was a little bit nicer to me. But yes, what Kelly's talking about with 8 years back, The next episodes we will be recording, it will be 1 week from today on Wednesday in the afternoon that we are that's good enough for you. There's more detail than that that you don't need to know behind the scenes. But let's just say on Wednesday in the afternoon, April 17th, 2013, and April 24th, 2013 are the episodes of NXT we're going to be talking about. So send us all your questions about Bo Salad and all of your questions about movies, since we spend a significant portion of the podcast talking about those as well. So go VIP so you can join the conversation.
Well, there you go. I wasn't sure if I was going to say this, but last week I was not here. I was not here because I was having a severe depression episode that was crossing over into a suicidal level. I don't talk about that much at all, but I did want to say that I've been kind of passing through that way of late. I'm a manic depressive, and it was a depressive week last week. Just make sure that if you are like me, you know when you need to ask for help, and you know who to ask for help. And if you're not, then check on your people. And that's all I'm going to say about that. And I don't think I'll probably ever pass that way again. Cheers, everybody. All right. We out.